later be recognized as one of the most ill-conceived and futile assaults of the Western theater. Often referred to as the Pickett's Charge of the West, the assault of 20,000 men famously resulted in the death or wounding of 14 of the Confederacy's generals, most famously Cleburne himself. In the Army of Tennessee, historian Stanley F. Horn described the Battle of Franklin, "The annals of war may long be searched for a parallel to the desperate valor of the charge of the Army of Tennessee at Franklin, a charge which has been called the greatest drama in American history." Perhaps its only rival for macabre distinction would be Pickett's charge at Gettysburg. A comparison of the two may be of interest. Pickett's total loss at Gettysburg was 1,354. At Franklin, the Army of Tennessee lost over 6,000 dead and wounded. Pickett's charge was made after a volcanic artillery preparation of 2 hours had battered the defending line. Hood's army charged without any preparation. Pickett's charge was across an open space of perhaps a mile. The advance at Franklin was for 2 miles in the open, in full view of the enemy's works, and exposed to their fire. The defenders at Gettysburg were protected only by a stone wall. Schofield's men at Franklin had carefully constructed works with trench and parapet. Pickett's charge was totally repulsed. The charge of Brown and Cleburne penetrated deep into the breastworks, to part of which they clung until the enemy retired. Pickett, once repelled, retired from the field. The Army of Tennessee renewed their charge time after time. Pickett survived his charge unscathed. Cleburne was killed, and 11 other general officers were killed, wounded, or captured. Pickett's charge at Gettysburg has come to be a synonym for unflinching courage in the raw. The slaughter pen at Franklin even more deserves the gory honor. After repeated frontal assaults failed to create a gap in the Union lines, Schofield withdrew his men across the river on the night of November 30th, successfully escaping Hood's army. Meanwhile, Hood had inflicted nearly 8,000 casualties upon his army, men the Confederacy could scarcely afford to lose, while the Union lost about a quarter of that. Despite practically wrecking his army, which was now only about 25,000 strong, Hood marched his battered army to a position outside Nashville, Tennessee, where he took up defensive positions while awaiting reinforcements from Texas. On December 1st, General Thomas sent word to Grant that he had retired to the fortifications around Nashville until I can get my cavalry equipped, a reference to the fact that Forrest's cavalry had more than double the manpower of the Union cavalry. But Thomas also added that, if Hood attacks our position, we would be seriously damaged. But if he makes no attack until our cavalry can be equipped, I, or General Schofield, will move against him at once. The following day, Grant wired back, "If Hood is permitted to remain quietly around Nashville, you will lose all the road back to Chattanooga and possibly have to abandon the line of the Tennessee. Should he attack you, it is all well. But if he does not, you should attack him before he fortifies. Arm and put in the trenches your quartermaster's employees, citizens, etc." Even with Grant constantly urging him forward, Thomas held back for nearly 2 weeks. Partly because of a bad ice storm, and his delay nearly resulted in having Grant remove him from command. When reinforcements didn't arrive by December 15th, Thomas finally devised a complex two-pronged attack that feinted at Hood's right flank while bringing overwhelming force on the left flank. During the two-day battle, Thomas effectively destroyed Hood's command, inflicting over 6,000 more Confederate casualties while losing less than half that. Upon reaching his headquarters at Tupelo, Mississippi, General Hood requested to be relieved of command rather than be removed in disgrace. Chapter 1. The Atlanta Campaign. Sherman's Atlanta Campaign was one of the most famous and decisive campaigns of the entire Civil War, but the success was only made possible after he and Ulysses S. Grant had overseen the lifting of the Confederate siege of Chattanooga after the Battle of Chickamauga. As a result, Sherman would start his Atlanta campaign using Chattanooga as his main supply and communications base, and he would launch that campaign with more than twice as many men at his disposal than the Army of Tennessee, which would start the campaign commanded by Joseph Johnson. Johnson, the man Longstreet had suggested to